Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at thomisticinstitute.org.
Before I begin, let me just say I did change this afternoon. Yes, just this afternoon, the title of the talk. As you can see here, we're going to be discussing the commands of charity. I'm talking about charity and its role in command, but I wanted to, following a discussion I had with some students today, talk more about the way in which charity relates to other kinds of friendship rather than other virtues. And I may have occasion to say something about the role of charity in relation to the virtues, but here I want to talk about friendship. And I want to do this because my ultimate goal is to give you some way of thinking about the coherence of your life. How does your life hang together? What makes it a whole? Other than the fact that all of your actions, the things you do, the things that happen to you or in some way involve you, what gives your life its logic? And what are the standards by which we can ask about that coherence? And for Thomas Aquinas, and I think for us today, that answer has to do with the relationship between one kind of friendship and every other friendship. Now, another way of putting the topic of this talk is to say I'm going to be explaining here what Thomas means in this first passage I have before you. And I'm just going to read it out loud, and then we'll have before us a general outline of the talk. So here's what Thomas says. Now, since the good upon which any other true friendship is founded is ordered, as to an end, to the good upon which charity is founded, it follows that charity commands the act of any other friendship, just as the art which is about the end commands the art, which is about those things that are toward the end. And so this very thing, to love someone because he's a relative or because he's an ally or a fellow citizen or for any other licit reason that can be ordered to the end of charity, can be commanded by charity. Now, those are all English words. And if I do my job, you'll walk away thinking that they're more than just all English words, but that there's something there. And to begin expositing the passage and then giving you that standard, that vision of a life, I'm going to begin by talking about friendship, all right? And then this is going to set the stage for then talking about one particular kind of friendship. You see, when Thomas speaks of charity, he's thinking of a kind of friendship. And this will then set us up for talking about the second passage here, where Thomas is speaking of the way in which certain arts relate to other arts and can command other arts, the whole goal being to bring into focus the sense in which charity, the love of God, or friendship with God, can be a kind of architectonic art in a human life. So, here goes. First, oh, what is friendship, anyway? Some of you came here together with other people. Some of you strolled in by yourself, but I take it that you all have friends, that you are friends to other friends, that you're invested in the lives of other people. But I bet the question, what is friendship, might give you some pause. Is it something that hovers between us, like a kind of strange metaphysical entity that we can talk about but never lay hold of? Or is it rather something that obtains within us? Well, in Thomas's view, the answer is going to be that it's both. A friendship, yes, is a kind of relationship. It's something that obtains between two or more persons. But also, and no less basically, Friendship is something within each friend by which they are born toward or oriented or ordered toward one another. In that respect, friendship is a habit, a habitual disposition. Think about it like this. There are many things in life that you do, thanks be, that you don't have to think about because you're inclined toward them almost by nature's necessity. You walk on two legs, but you didn't always, though I grant that you're all bipedal. You had to be taught how to walk, and the way in which you walk is in fact a matter of habit. You can exhibit a certain kind of gait, right? There are many, most things in life that are not matters of deliberation. We don't have to talk ourselves into them, but we do them by inclination, that inclination being worked up within us through a kind of practice, through a kind of experience, a kind of repetition. And Thomas sees that friendship is like that. It is one thing to love someone else, to wish them some good. It's another thing to be habitually oriented toward another person in love. And it's that habitual orientation that is most basically at issue when we're talking about friendship on Thomistic grounds. Okay? So then what's a friendship? Well, I've just said that friendship will involve, or just is, a kind of habitual disposition in a person. It's a habitual disposition by which you are inclined to will the good of someone who wills your good in turn. Think of it like this. I was just watching last week basketball game after basketball game, and I, you know, stumbled upon this fellow from NC State. I don't know if any of you noticed this gentleman, DJ Burns. Hard not to love that guy. He's a lot of fun to watch, okay? I can will the good to DJ Burns and not be his friend. Why? Because he doesn't have the foggiest idea that I exist. He doesn't will my good in return. So when you have a friendship, you have someone who's willing the good of another person, who wills their good in turn, and then we can say something like this. A friendship, understood as a kind of relationship, obtains whenever you have two or more people who are joined together in the mutual pursuit of some shared good, where that good, that thing that both friends are after, is the good they will each other. And if you grant that, then you have, Thomas thinks, two different ways of talking about kinds of friendship. Here's the first. The first kind will be a division that looks at the aspect under which each person is understood or seen by the other, what makes them lovable to each other. So here's one kind of friendship, it's a familiar one. And to discover that you are in a friendship like this, where you thought it was a friendship of another kind, can be sometimes quite painful. I'm thinking of friendships of pleasure. Friendships of pleasure aim at what? The pleasure of each friend. And the thing that each friend is pursuing in conjunction with one another is some kind of pleasure. And for this reason, whenever that source of pleasure dissolves or is obstructed in some way, the friendships tend to end. These are, okay, your drinking buddies, the people you're getting together with, you know, to get a lighter head for a heavy heart. This is, they're a lot of fun, but a friendship that never progresses beyond being a mere friendship of pleasure is quickly dissolved. Just like, in many instances, another kind of friendship, namely a friendship of utility. Okay? There's nothing wrong with a friendship of utility. Nothing wrong with being well disposed toward another person who, in pursuit of some good that is useful to you both. But neither of these kinds of friendship will yet rise to the level of what Thomas calls a true friendship, which is a friendship that is aimed neither at merely at pleasure or utility, but simply at the good of each friend for his or her own sake. So looked at in those terms, you can think of friendship as having of being of basically three kinds. Okay, from another vantage, though, we can look at friendships and divide them into kinds based on what Thomas calls their various communicationes. Now, that's a hard word to get from medieval Latin into English. It could mean sharing. It could mean fellowship. It could mean society. The best way to bring its meaning into focus is to begin with giving you examples, right? So suppose you are on 81, as I was yesterday, and there's a massive wreck, and you are just stuck there with your Uber driver. And now, 3 hours later, you've learned more about one another than you ever thought possible or ever wanted to know. You have found yourself, if only for a brief moment, in what Thomas calls a friendship of the road. Okay? What is it? Amicitia peregrinationis, a friendship of travel. It's the Lord of the Rings, right? What binds these people together? Well, initially, it's that they're all going somewhere together. The thing at which the friendship aims is just that place. And when they arrive there, the friendship, if it's merely a friendship of the road, it will dissolve. Here's another example. You have the friendship that obtains between members of a military, where the good at which they are all mutually invested is the victory of the army. Or you have what Thomas will call political friendship. It's the kind of friendship that obtains between two or more persons who are all equally invested in the pursuit of the political good, which by definition is a shared good. It's not something that can be had alone. It's social in its essence. The point here is just to say, look, we have different kinds of friendships, different ways in which we are connected to one another, and those friendships can be understood with respect to the way in which we see one another as worthy of friendship or as lovable, as Thomas puts it, or they can be understood based on the various kinds of fellowship and sharing and more basically the goods at which various friendships are ordered, okay? Now that's just a big, long prelude to the really big point. It's a really, really big point. Here's what Thomas sees. When he looks at John 15 and reads, as I hope you've heard it read, when Jesus says, I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends. Thomas thinks this is exceedingly good news. And to understand it, you have to understand what Christ means there by friendship. And what he means is, I no longer call you servants, but I call you those whom I love, and now by grace will be loved by me in return. And Thomas then asks, well, then what kind of friendship is this? What's it aimed at? It's not a fellowship of the road. It's not a political friendship. The good at which this friendship aims is nothing other than God Himself. Charity is a specific kind of friendship. It's a true friendship insofar as by it we are made or enabled to love others for their own sake. Those others being first God, and then others, insofar as they're connected with God, insofar as God loves them. It's a specific kind of friendship in that respect. It's a true friendship, and it's founded on a kind of fellowship. So when Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, he's saying something about the kind of friendship that charity just is. And what he's saying is that the thing that we are willing another when we are willing others some good is nothing but God, or friendship with God. It's nothing but this union, this conjunction, this mutual pursuit. Well, that's the first part of the talk, and there's quite a lot more to say about it, but it's all really a wind-up because I need to now say something about how this friendship relates to every other kind of friendship. So the first piece here is, according to Thomas, as you can see here in this first paragraph, in some important respect, the good at which every other friendship aims is somehow ordered to the good of charity. Now, how's that so? Well, in the first respect, it's true in a very objective sense. Every good, everything that exists is from God, and its goodness is derivative of God insofar as its very existence is a kind of faint participation of God. God upholds it in being. And so every good, then, at which every other friendship aims, will somehow just objectively find its telos in God. But what Thomas means here is not merely a metaphysical point. He's rather talking about the order of intention, the intentional structure of a life, how it is that we are meant to understand the relationship between this friendship and every other friendship. And so between this good, God, and every other good at which our other friendships are aimed. And the big, interesting, but initially perplexing point in this paragraph is, at first blush at least, more obscure because of the example that Thomas gives. He tells us that the end upon which, or the good upon which charity is founded, is the kind of good to which every other good is ordered, so that charity, he says, commands the acts of every other friendship, just as the art which is about the end commands the art which is about those things that are toward the end. And here's an instance where you're reading a medieval or maybe an ancient text, and the example that's given is more obscure than the claim itself. And if you can drill down into it and hang there for a bit, and as it comes into focus, that everything else comes into focus as well. And so what we have to do now to bring that point into clarity is examine another passage where Thomas will talk here about various arts and the way in which they're related to one another. So I'm going to read that passage now. It comes from his work Against the Gentiles, as it's sometimes rendered. So here's the quote. It's from Book 3, Chapter 4. For whenever things are ordered to a certain end, all are subject to the disposition of the one to whom that end principally belongs. And then he gives us an example of an army. For all parts of the army and their works are ordered to the good of the leader, or you could say the general, and that good is victory, as to an ultimate end, and because of this, it pertains to the leader to govern the whole army. Similarly, the art which is about the end commands and gives laws to the art which is about those things that are ordered towards the end, as the civil art does to the military art, and the military art does to the equestrian art, and the art of steering does to the art of shipbuilding, end quote. And you're still going, what? So let's be really concrete, all right? Look at the last line. He's giving us a sequence of examples. Let's take the first. To say that the political art gives rules or laws or commands the military art is to say that the art of statesmanship, the art of politics, classically understood, I don't mean, you know, hucksters and things of this nature. I mean political science, construed precisely as a science, will, if it's about the political good, give, in a sense, rules or commands to the military art insofar as the military art is aimed at the protection of the civil good. Maybe that doesn't make sense. We'll think then of the relationship to the military art or the art of victory
or the art of military victory. Think about the relationship between that and the equestrian art. Now, I grant that you can ride horses for many reasons besides military victory, and I also grant that there aren't many people who are putting their faith in horsemanship these days. But
bear with me. In the military domain, in matters to do with fighting, which is aimed at victory, which is the end of the military art, there is a right and wrong way to ride a horse. You will want to ride that horse just so. And that the way in which you ride the horse and you position yourself in a way that you are able to access your weapons or quickly dismount and so forth will be determined by what? Ultimately, it will be determined, the various rules of military horsemanship, by what best conduces toward the end of the military art. Yeah? Or think of it like this. There's an art of spear making. You know, if you're just throwing lawn darts, you're looking for one kind of spear, but if you're trying to kill a man and not be killed by him, then you're looking for a spear of a very different kind. And here, again, you see that the art of generalship or of military victory governs arts which are subordinate to it. Yeah? One will ride a horse just so, and will make spears just so, and will make ships just so, and so on and so forth, insofar as the way in which one goes about these activities will be governed, shaped by this, what Thomas calls architectonic art. And that's what he means when he says that the art which is about the end commands the art which is about the means. Yeah? And what's the point of all that? The point of all that is to say that in a human life, when it is ordered as it can and ought to be, when it comes to most fulfill what a human life can become, when it most approximates the life that is of Christ and of the saints, its structure will be like the structure that obtains between an art that is about an end and an art is about the means. How? It will be because all of your friendships, everyone you love and every reason for which you love them, and every good that you seek in conjunction with others, and the way in which those goods are sought will be ultimately governed by the friendship that is about the end, which those other goods are merely means in with relation to. That is to say that your life will be governed, all of your friendships will be commanded by this very one friendship, which is friendship of charity, friendship with God.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.